Hi, this is Helen Rosner, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. You're the bomb.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, the number one female-focused food podcast in the universe. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. For today's show, I sat down with the life force known as Susan Feniger. This trailblazing chef, restaurateur, and activist has been on quite the journey, from Toledo, Ohio, to France, to LA, to the Food Network, and beyond. She and Mary Sue Milliken, her business partner, just opened their latest place, Socolo, an all-day California canteen in Santa Monica. Susan is truly one in a million, and I can't wait for you to hear our conversation. First, let's take care of some housekeeping. The latest issue of Cherry Bomb magazine is out right now. It's our first ever fashion issue and features five different covers with women who bring a sense of style to everything they do. Visit cherrybomb.com to subscribe or buy an issue, or you can stop by your favorite magazine shop or bookstore, like Now Serving in Los Angeles. Also, the Cherry Bomb membership has officially launched. For $40, you can be a card-carrying member of the Bomb Squad. Founding memberships are available right now. Visit cherrybomb.com to get your card and to see what all the perks are. Thank you to everyone who stopped by our first NYC member meetup. It was great seeing all of you. And our next meetup is in Charleston, South Carolina on January 15th. Now, here's my conversation with Chef Susan Feniger. How do you have so much energy? Every picture, you're smiling, you're doing a new project, you're with a musician, you're with young chefs, you're with a kitchen crew.
Yeah, I love what I do. I particularly love when I'm not in meetings, my least favorite thing. You know, I love what I do, and I get a ton of energy from the people that I work with, you know, and the young kids. I think I'm like as young as them, and it's playful and fun, and there's just so many interesting things to learn. I feel so lucky because I continue to learn all the time. And, you know, your passions change over the years of what you're most passionate about and what you want to do. And I do think about, you know, slowing down a bit. Like, I like the idea of my workday being shorter, you know, shorter than a 10 or 12-hour day. So I like the idea of that. I'm working on that really hard, although I had told my sister-in-law I was going to go back to therapy about a year ago to try to slow down a bit, figure out how to slow down. About a month ago, she said to me, like, I don't think your therapist is very good based on what you're doing right now. So
what does your, I hate the word empire, but like, what does your empire consist of today?
So, I mean, I don't really think it's an empire compared to some of the people that are out there. I mean, it's not, but it's just, I think the scope of what we do, and that's something I think we've always done, is we've sort of picked to do the things that we love to do. So whether it's, you know, teaching or TV or radio
food
or
trucks,
writing. I mean, we have
catering, everything.
Yeah, I mean, we've got six cookbooks. You know, we had radio show Good Food on KCRW, the NPR station.
Food radio pioneers.
Way back then. I mean, we actually, way back then when we did that, we approached Ruth Seymour, who ran KCRW in Los Angeles. We approached her. We wanted to do like a 5-minute political food show, like on, you know, frozen food and, you know, hormone free and antibiotic free. This is how, whatever, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. She was like, no, girls, not that. You want to do a food show? Okay, you can start this Friday, half hour show, come in. And we were like, okay, what are we going to call it? You know, so it was sort of a, you know, we wanted to be political. She was like, no, you're not being political about food. Just come in and do food. So radio, you know, TV was, you know, Too Hot Tamales, right?
But Food Network now, pioneers also. We'll talk about
way
that.
Way back. So we have Border Grill in Las Vegas. So Border Grill we opened in 1984. We opened City in 1981. But Border Grill in Vegas at Mandalay Bay is still there. It's amazing. We love it. It's a huge restaurant, but it's been amazing for us. We have Barbecue Mexicana, which is right across from Border Grill at Mandalay Bay. We have Barbecue Mexicana at the baseball stadium in Las Vegas, the Oakland A's minor league team, which is very cool. We have Border Grill in downtown Los Angeles, two Border Grills out at the Rose Bowl, and a Border Grill at LAX, the Airport International Terminal. And then we just opened in Long Beach, Pachamama's, which is a proven skewers and ceviche, and then a Border Barbecue. And then we're opening Socolo in about 5 days, we think, or 10, depending on the final inspector, which who knows, in Santa Monica. So Socolo, which is breakfast, lunch, and dinner Mexican, and it's a sort of a spin on Zocalo in Mexico, which are the town squares. We are opening in the summer on Barbecue Mexicana, another one at LAX, which we're excited about. And we hope to be opening in the Raider Stadium in Vegas, a couple concepts. But so, you know, and catering. And we've got two taco trucks, Border Grill taco trucks, and catering. And, you know, but they're all, you know, some are bigger, some are small. Yeah, and we have a lot of employees. I mean, we have less than we used to have. I don't know. We probably have 400, maybe 450, something like that.
Remarkable.
Know?
Well, yeah, it's incredible what you and Mary Sue have built. I mean, it's just, we really marvel at it. And also Vegas, like you're one of the only women with a major place on the Strip in Vegas. There's Lorena Garcia, Giada.
Yeah,
and you too.
Elizabeth Blau, who, you know, lives there, who, you know, I love. I mean, yeah, we've been there. We opened Border Grill at Mandalay Bay 21 years ago, I think. Yeah, there are not a lot of women chefs or restaurateurs mm-hmm. in Vegas. It's interesting.
We're dying to come and meet everybody there.
Yeah, it's an amazing market. It really is. It's very interesting. It was very European chef-driven for many, and still is. You know, but it's shifting, but certainly still not a lot of women.
Yeah.
You know, Elizabeth Blau is sort of working hard to pull together a group of people to help Las Vegas shift, because it's something like 50% of all the graduates from culinary schools are women, but in the country, only 7% are executive chefs and owners. So, and in Vegas, less. So,
yeah. Those, I think that's changing, though.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, just from what we see and the people who reach out to us, it's incredible the variety of projects that women have in the food space today.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Probably many are smart not to be chefs of restaurants.
All right. So you were born in Ohio, right? Where in Ohio?
Toledo. Yeah.
And was it I know no one used the word foodie back then, but were you a foodie family?
No. Although my mom was, you know, my mom was a great cook. She really was a great cook, but, I mean, they definitely weren't foodies. But I don't think then, you know, this is a long time ago. I don't think there were foodies. I mean, she was really a good cook.
What did your mom make?
You know, a Jewish Midwest family, so, you know, brisket. She would do icebox cakes with ladyfingers. And even one time, she packed up six of them, frozen, and sent them to us at City Cafe back in 1982. Hysterical. So like icebox cakes, like mocha and chocolate and strawberry and vanilla with ladyfingers. You know, she would do these little cheese dreams with Velveeta cheese and white bread.
A cheese dream?
They were fabulous.
Okay, walk us through what a cheese dream is.
I don't even remember exactly. I mean, I was a kid doing them with her. She took white bread, cut the crust off, and then coated them with margarine. And then made a stack of this white bread. And then she did something in a double boiler with Velveeta cheese and like paprika and whatever.
I just Googled cheese dreams and it comes up.
Velveeta?
And the recipes. Yeah.
Does it? Does mine come up?
Let's see.
No one ever remembered how to, because, you know, the recipes, I have a little recipe card file with little, like, you know, things from my grandmother and my mother and from when I was in culinary, which is very cool. And, you know, over the years, like frozen fruit mold that my mom made, you know, with sour cream and canned pineapple and cherries, maraschino cherries and that. And, you know.
And you still have that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you photographed it? That's amazing.
I haven't, but I should.
You should.
I should, you I should. Know. It was great, like the Velveeta thing, and then you'd roll up this white bread that was all buttered, margarine, on the outside and freeze them. And when friends would, because friends would come over like Sunday afternoon, my parents, people would pop in and that. And you take them out and you put them in a really hot oven and then under the broiler, and they get crispy golden, like a grilled cheese sandwich, but rolled up in a roll.
Okay.
They're
those right
fabulous. They're fabulous.
Next time I see Velveeta, I'm going to snap it up and do that. So when and where did you decide you wanted to be a chef?
Well, you know, I mean, I did, you know, I started in a hippie college. So I was studying philosophy and that. And then I dropped out of college and moved in with my boyfriend and then lived in a teepee, sewed a teepee in Vermont. And then after it got so cold and living in the teepee, decided, you know, I was working for a cabinet maker, decided, you know, I should go back to college. So moved out to California, met this amazing economics professor, changed my major to economics. And all along, because I'd been living with my boyfriend, you know, my parents weren't very supportive. So I started working in the kitchen. I had worked in a kitchen for a year when I was in high school and just fell in love with it. But there weren't a lot of kitchens in a little town in Vermont. But I started working in the kitchen while I was in college. And the guy that ran the kitchen there, as I was studying economics, said, you know, I don't even know, why are you here? Why don't you go to culinary school? And I convinced my economics professor to let me do my last year and a half at the CIA in Hyde Park. So I transferred to the CIA and graduated from college in California at the CIA and never looked back, and worked the whole time while I was at the culinary. So I worked, went to class in the morning. I worked at a great little restaurant called Harold's in Brewster, New York, and then worked in, I worked.
Well, tell me what it was like at the CIA.
So this was in Hyde Park, right? And it was, I think there were two girls in the class, and
out of
100 maybe, or 80 or something. There were not very many women then. And it was a fantastic time. I mean, I think, you know, it helped me to really get a basis. Obviously not, you know, I think people that go to culinary school, sometimes, you know, you come out and think you have a ton more experience and knowledge than you do. For me, I think maybe because I had had a few years of college, I'm not sure, but I think I was old enough to realize this just opens your eyes to a bunch of stuff. So I ended up at, when I was there, I'd go to school in the morning. You go 6 or 7 hours in the morning. By 1 or 2, you're done. I worked for like 6 months in a fish market in Poughkeepsie where I filleted fish for like the next 5 hours. So that, and then I ended up working for a year in Brewster in a French restaurant there. So I started to get, you know, a solid understanding of what I didn't know. And then I worked, you know, I left there and then moved to, because I was still with my partner, then my boyfriend, and moved to Kansas City, worked for an amazing Swiss chef there at a restaurant called La Bonne Auberge, which was incredible. And he was very hard worker. So I would go in like at 7 in the morning for free and work until with him, because he was doing all the pastries. He built his wine room. And so I'd go with him until like I clocked in at 2 and then worked the night shift and worked there for probably a year and a half or 2. Then from there, I moved to Chicago and then got a job at Le Perroquet in Chicago.
And that's where you met Mary Sue.
That's where I met Mary Sue.
I was reading an article from the Chicago Tribune, and it's kind of crazy. I think it was from like 1985 or something like that. And the owner actually said to the paper, when Mary Sue came for the interview, I told her she was too attractive a woman to work in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And she should get herself a job as a hat check girl.
Yeah. And then she persisted. She kept sending him letters. And I think he finally hired her because he thought she was going to sue him or something.
But just shocking, like 30 years, you know, 30
years
that
was
forward.
That was in 78. 78 or
But 9. Could you imagine a restaurateur going on record with a major national newspaper and saying that. Something like that today. He'd be destroyed on Twitter in 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. But that was an unbelievable restaurant. That was so ahead of its time. Like, incredible. Just doing, we saved like, I mean, we he was really on the top of his game. It was the beginning of Nouvelle Cuisine. So we were doing, you know, like whole baby lambs, like boning them, stuffing them, using every single part. We were doing lamb kidneys. We were doing tripe. You know, we were making amazing pâtés, which wasn't that ahead of its time. But, you know, we'd save the butter wrappers so that we could use that instead of parchment paper for pastry cream. You know, we use like the stems.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, because you clarify like 25 pounds of butter a day and then you'd have all these wrappers. And he was just so, he was very on top of it.
Never thought about reusing my, I go through a lot of butter. Never thought about reusing my butter wrappers.
Yeah, we just saved them all in the walk-in and used
them. So sustainable. So ahead of your time.
He was very, and like all the broccoli stems, cauliflower stems, we saved all those. And they were made into a mousse every day for a scallop dish that we used. So he never threw away anything. He skimmed the chicken fat. We had to skim that off the stock, clarify that, and we use that for sauteing other poultry. It was really, it was a very interesting kitchen. And then I left Chicago after I worked there for about a year. Mary Sue and I were the only two women in that kitchen.
So did you two bond?
We did.
Instantly? Did it take a little time for you two to become friends?
Well, I mean, we were the only two women in the kitchen. And the chef, actually, not the owner, the chef, to me, was a complete He was so mean to me. And eventually, many, many years later, I think we realized that he was very jealous because I had come out and he hadn't. And so we think that's why he was such a jerk. But every afternoon, in the afternoon, I would go, like, on our break at, like, 3, go, I'd just be in the bathroom, like, crying. And Mary Sue just would be like, just hang in there. It's a great kitchen. Just stick it out. So I did. I did. And
so what you said, because you came out and he didn't?
Yeah.
Meaning?
I was out. I had left my husband, and I was with women, and he was gay and hadn't come out, and he was married with kids. And
was that hard for you to come out?
No, I didn't even think about it. Literally did not think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you know, my partner, who's my wife now of 24 years, you know, is like, was someone who knew she was a lesbian from the time. I mean, she didn't know it, but when she was like 6, you know, or when she was 12, she told her mom, and her mom said, you know, don't worry, you'll grow out of it. I never even thought about it. And when I came out, or when I met a woman that I was still with my husband at that time, I was like, I didn't even think about it. It was very easy for me. I mean, I know it's not for many people, but, you know, it for me, it was very easy.
So then you moved to L.A.
Then I moved to L.A., and I had like 3 restaurants I wanted to work at. It was either L'Hermitage, Ma Maison, or L'Orangerie.
Happened in time in L.A.
Yeah, it was very hot time there, and I got a job at Ma Maison. Wolfgang Puck was the chef then, and that was a crazy time in L.A., crazy.
Imagine. Have you written a memoir?
No.
Are you working on one?
No.
You should.
I know.
You've had quite the life.
Yeah.
And we're only up to, like, what, the 80s?
Yeah, that was a crazy time in L.A., really fun, and that restaurant was, you know, it was all indoor, outdoor carpet. That restaurant was just a piece of junk. But, you know, everybody, and, you know, I came from the Midwest, and, you know, the tickets that came back. I mean, it was Jane Fonda, Paul Newman, Orson Welles, and I'm from the Midwest. I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. You know, I could never believe the valet, because the parking lot was right off the kitchen. So the valet guys would come and tell me, like, okay, that's Jane Fonda's car. That it was just very, very, I'm still very starstruck. So
that's
I loved it. It was a very fun time, and, you know.
What was Wolfgang like as a boss?
Fabulous. He was crazy and fun, very different than the chef. And, you know, I remember I called Mary Sue and said, you know, you can't believe it. I don't have to wear a chef's hat here. You know, it's just very fun. It was
just a
very different kitchen.
The weather versus Chicago, my gosh.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm still a Midwest girl. I still love the cold.
You love a winter.
Yeah.
So what was the vibe in L.A. back then? Because, I mean, it was just such a hot scene. And, you know, so many people who we now, you know and love were coming up in the scene then. Jonathan Waxman, Nancy Silverton.
Yeah, Michael McCarty.
Did you all feel like hot?
No, you know, not really. I mean, we were, you know, I think L.A. had never been thought much of as a restaurant town. And so, you know, there was a camaraderie that was just incredible. So we all did events together, you know, Piero Salvaggio, Wolf, Ken Frank, Nancy. Well, Nancy was younger, so she wasn't quite there yet, you know, obviously soon. We all did events together. So we did every single event with the same group of chefs. So people were supportive. So whenever you needed anything, you could call. I mean, when I opened, so after Ma Maison, I went to the south of France and worked for a year at L'Oasis, which was a 3-star restaurant there for Outier. And when I came back, I opened City Cafe with the women who owned LAI Works. So there was a very strong, they were very immersed in the art world and design glasses. And so you were very connected. We were very connected into the art world because of them. And we had this little tiny 9-table restaurant. When I was in the south of France, Mary Sue ended up in Paris at almost identical times. So I was at L'Oasis. We literally arrived in Paris 2 weeks apart from each other.
And you two did not plan that?
It wasn't planned at all. I Wow. happened to call her. She called me when I was in L.A. and she was still in Chicago. I said, you know, I've got a job at L'Oasis. I'm going to the south of France. And she said, well, I'm leaving for Paris like in a week. And it was very strange. So we ended up each working there for about a year. And then when the season ended in the south, I came to Paris, spent like a month in Paris working at a huge catering company. And she had slipped. She worked for a 2-star restaurant for a woman in Paris called Restaurant d'Olympe, I think. And she had slipped and broke a bone in her back. So she was sort of out of there. And we both ended up at this catering company. There was a huge catering company called Potel et Chabot. And we worked there for about a month. And, of course, at nighttime we'd be done. And then, you know, we'd go back to her apartment where it was like the size of this studio. And so she had taken the mattress off her bed and put it on the floor. I slept there. She slept on the box springs. So... anyways, we decided
that's friendship.
Drunk one night, I think, that we'd open a restaurant together. And I moved out to L.A., and these friends of mine from LAI Works were trying to do this little cafe. I worked mornings at Ma Maison, and again, I came back to Ma Maison. Wolf had just opened Spago, and then I worked nights getting this cafe going with a hot plate. And
right, you had no stove.
No stove. I had a hot plate and 2 hibachi grills in the parking lot out back for a year.
And you made some miracles
that way
with limited equipment.
Until health department came and said, you know, you can't cook on the parking lot ground for customers. I was like, really? Anyways, then Mary Sue moved out from Chicago, and it was in 1981, City Cafe.
Amazing.
And it was tiny, tiny, but very cool.
We'll be right back with Susan Feniger after this quick break.
Hello. This is producer Jess Seidman. You know we have a podcast, but did you know we also have a magazine? We do. We just released our 14th issue. It's all about the intersection of food and fashion. We have 5 incredible cover girls, including chef activist Angela DeMayuga. And guess what? You might even see a story or two written by a certain Radio Cherry Bomb producer about cabbage and clogs. Subscribe now. For more information about all things Cherry Bomb magazine, visit cherrybomb.com.
You've had such an amazing career and you're an amazing businesswoman, obviously. You know, what advice do you have for folks who are starting out and building their businesses? I mean, I know that's a broad question,
yeah.
But I'm sure there are things when you look back, you wish that it just hadn't been so painful in terms of lessons learned, mistakes made.
I feel like I don't learn from my mistakes, but whatever, you know. I think doing what you're passionate about is the most important thing. I mean, obviously, you got to make a living. So, you know, that's obviously first and foremost. But I really think passion is a big part of when people make decisions to do something that just going to make them money or that they feel like they should do. I mean, sometimes I'm sure you can be successful at it. But for me, it's about being able to love what I do. And in the restaurant business, I love the kitchen part of it more than anything. I mean, I like the interaction with customers, too. Certainly, I do that. But I love the energy in the kitchen. And I think as a leader, you need to set the example. So if you're a jerk, it usually translates down. If you're respectful from dishwasher on up, you know, to the top, that's how I think people feel loyal and committed to you. I mean, I think when you're working for people, you know, the most important thing is that you are respectful and you leave with a way that's respectful, because you never know who eventually, you know, you never know who's going to be your boss. So when you're a boss and you're treating people, you just don't know. So
100%. I always say that to the team, like, you never know who you're going to wind up working with again.
Yeah.
You really don't. How involved are you today in the business side of your business? The contracts, the negotiations?
Very involved.
The accounting?
More involved than I want to be. You know, I would say, Mary Sue and I are still, you know, very hands-on in the business, for sure. Probably Mary Sue drives that part of it more than me. And part of that is just, you know, as we were growing in the business, she had kids, two young kids. So she ended up being more in the restaurants in day and then going home at night. And I would be more in the restaurants day and night. But I think she probably leads that a bit more. But we're both, whenever we're doing any contracts, anything, we're both still very immersed in it. I don't think that's something that either one of us really want to be doing that much, but we are.
But you're doing some really complicated projects with sports stadiums,
airports. We have an amazing lawyer. We have a lawyer who's been our lawyer for probably 25 years, 30 years. I went to college with her and ran into her like 10 years later. Wendy Glenn, she's been our lawyer for many, many years, and she acts as a lawyer as well as someone who's very immersed in helping us with business decisions. So we count on her quite a bit. We really do.
Is she your full-time lawyer?
She doesn't work. No.
No, she doesn't.
Yes, I mean, she probably would
she
say she's full-time.
Is, yeah.
But no.
But not on staff.
She's not on staff, okay. And she's also trying. She sort of left her big firm, and now she works on her own, so she's kept a few clients that she still works with.
Mm-hmm. So we always ask women on the show how they make a living and how they actually get paid. And
yeah.
What are the revenue streams that are actually working today?
Border Grill Las Vegas, you know, has been great for us. And I have to say, we've been very hands-on with that restaurant and have an amazing relationship now with, it's MGM, but the executives, the people who run Mandalay Bay high up have been fabulous. So they're just our landlord. So when we went into that deal, which is different than many of the chefs, most of the chefs that have gone there that are celebrity chefs, we basically, they're our landlord. So that's been very interesting for us, because we went out and raised the money back then to open up there because we were naive and was like, we just want to own our restaurants. We don't want to. So we eventually, we had partners in all of our different restaurants, all different LLCs, and we eventually, over the years, bought out all of our partners. So we own all of our restaurants now.
That's remarkable.
So that's been over the years. Now, that we've closed restaurants, too. And, you know, the restaurants where we didn't have partners are the restaurants where Mary Sue and I lost our money. So to me, it's a very good lesson. It was something that we had sort of always lived by, which is, get partners. You know, don't be selfish, because, you know, partners are great for many reasons. One, they come to your restaurants. I mean, they're limited partners. They're silent partners. They're not, you know, hands-on partners. But, you know, they also take the risk. They take the risk. And so that was something that I think was a very important thing for Mary Sue and I getting started.
We hear so much today how hard it is for women still to raise money. Was that not your experience?
Yes. I mean, it was called everyone we knew, go through every, you know, at that time, Rolodex, and get everyone you knew and friends and family. And
how do you deal with the rejection?
You just keep calling the next next one and next one and next one.
Also, partnerships. So you and Mary Sue have had a remarkable partnership for a very long time.
38 years, or however many that is, from 81 to now. 38 years or nine or whatever.
I mean, I'm sure, I know for a fact, you have seen so many industry partnerships just flame out spectacularly.
Yeah.
What has been your secret?
Therapy. I mean, not together. Although when I opened Street, which was a restaurant I did separate from Mary Sue, you know, we did go for a short period of time just to try to figure out how do you deal with it, because we've been partners for so long.
Some business partners do go to therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've each been in our own individual therapy over the years. And so I think what it taught me, and I'm assuming her too, is that, you know, you have to be responsible for your own stuff. And you can't control what the other person does or doesn't do. And I think we're very different. We have different strengths for sure. So as collaborators, that really works. Sometimes it's challenging. And certainly over the years, we disagree on so many things for sure. Like, I want to pay more. She thinks we should pay less. So we've come between. I want to do 6 courses. She wants to do 4. We end up at 5. So I think we have learned over the years how you give and take. The things that are really important to her, you bend on. And same thing with her. I think we just have learned, you know, how to negotiate that. And it's worked really well. We definitely complement each other with our strengths and weaknesses. There's no question about it. And I think we've seen when we've done stuff separately, we each take on the other's quality. Let's say way back when she did an event without me, she was so worried she hadn't ordered enough, she ordered way too much. And I think I've done it where when I do it, you know, I think, oh my God, I've ordered way too much, I better order less, and then it's too short. So I think we do complement each other in that way. And we're both from the Midwest, which I think we're both really hardworking. And I think when things are good, it's never, you know, you don't have to deal with it. When things are bad or you're losing a restaurant, I think it's when we become the strongest together. We're most on the same page. When things are tough, we both are willing to sort of figure out how do we get through this and where do we need to cut back and how do we do it. So I think the tough times are when it's hardest to be alone in a business. But being together in a business means everybody has to give and take. And it's just like any relationship.
Who are some women you admire on the LA food scene today?
Suzanne Goin, I think, is amazing, you know, and Carolyn Stein. I love their food. I love their energy. They're great restaurateurs. You know, I mean, of course, all the people that are all pals, like Nancy. When we opened City Restaurant, Nancy and Mark opened Campanile, seven or 8 years later, just down the street. So we were like neighbors constantly. And then when I opened Street and Moza, they were like literally like 4 doors away. Suzanne Track is there. And I mean, there's, God, of course, I can't remember anything. Like I said, I'm old.
Do you go out to eat a lot?
Probably not that much. I do go out. I end up going in our neighborhood, you know, because for many, many years, I worked until, you know, 10 or 11 at night. And when Liz and I first started dating, she lived in Santa Monica and near Border Grill, Santa Monica. And I would meet her like at 10 o'clock or 10:30 at Izzy's Deli, which is open 24 hours a day. So we tend to be, so even now if I get done, you know, let's say I get done at even early, like at 8 or 8:30, Liz doesn't want to come cross town to downtown. Now that I'm opening again in Santa Monica, it'll be, you know, easier. So I worked many, many nights forever. So, you know, at that point, and LA is an early, early night town. I mean, by 10 o'clock, everything is closed unless you're going to a club or somewhere in Hollywood. So, I mean, I go out, but I tend to sort of end up, you know, I try to go to some of the new places so I can sort of see what's going on. But I'm still in the restaurants a lot at nighttime. So
have you stood online at Squirrel?
You know, I haven't. I mean, one of the great things about being a chef is, you know.
Oh, you've been, you just sneak in.
I mean, that is one of the great things, you know, about being a chef. One of the benefits for sure.
That's so funny. Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah.
What they're doing at Squirrel and our friends at Kismet. And
yeah, Kismet, of course, same thing, Sarah and Sarah.
It's such a great scene.
I love them both. I think they're amazing chefs. Incredible. Yeah, like them. I mean, there's many, many more, I'm sure, that I haven't mentioned. But Sarah and Sarah are pals of ours. And, you know, I love Kismet and I love everything that they're doing.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up with all the projects in L.A. right now.
Yeah.
There are so many incredible things going on.
Yeah, and you know, there's the camaraderie. Maybe it's everywhere, but L.A. chefs, there's a camaraderie that's really special and wonderful. I mean, I just don't feel a competitive thing there and never have.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
So if folks want to come visit you at your new place, will you be there in the kitchen?
I will be. I think with Socolo opening, you know, certainly for the first few months, I'm sure we'll both be there quite a bit. And then you go wherever you're most needed. But like in Long Beach, I've been there for the last month quite a bit. It's just, you know, you walk up, order, and I've sort of been there and dealing, you know, with that, making, you know, burnt end brisket wraps and... Yeah,
I want one of those right now.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, this dinner we're doing tonight, it's not burnt end, but the brisket's really delicious.
Yeah. Well, we're going to stop there. We're going to do a little speed round. We could still talk about your cookbook career, your trailblazing Food Network career. I mean, so many things you've done.
Let me just tell you about this thing that's like the thing I'm most excited about right now is I'm on the board of the Los Angeles LGBT Center, which is the largest gay and lesbian center in the world. And we have 8 or 9 campuses in Los Angeles and over like 700 employees. And we just opened our new campus, which has 100 beds for homeless youth and 199 apartments for low-income seniors. And we just launched in June the Culinary Kitchen. So it's a professional kitchen where you go through homeless youth and seniors. So it's intergenerational. A 12-week program of where Chefware donated all the uniforms. And you go through this 12-week program where, you know, it gives people an opportunity to have family, like restaurants do, to learn a skill, to go out there. And, of course, we have a great job placement program. Go into restaurants where you now create, for many kids who have no family now, the restaurant family that happens, plus a way to make a living. And it's been an amazing thing. And in addition to that, this kitchen, part of their first 4 weeks and their next 4 weeks is producing food for youth that are coming in and seniors coming in every day. We're producing over 500 meals a day for these, rather than getting them through Project Angel Food, for seniors that are coming in and sit down now and have an amazing buffet where they're eating off of china and they're eating like stuffed pork loin and things that they're learning every day. And so it's just something I'm very, very excited about. And, you know, if you come out to Vegas, you should come to LA and do this tour of our culinary.
What's your role there?
I probably was the one that pushed our board and pushed that we make this part of our funding to do it. And now I go there, stop in whenever they're cooking and taste things. And we have two people who were part of LA Kitchen and then now run the kitchen here. And so I just there for inspiration and if they ever need anything. And then we're one of the restaurants that take interns when they're doing their internship. I try to go as much as I can. Because it is the heart and soul of the new campus. And I think no one really knew, but it is because food is. And so it's an amazing, I mean, I love it. It's really just very exciting and very cool. It's at the new Anita Mae Rosenstein campus, and it's just mind-boggling.
We would love to come see it and get a tour and write about it.
And the board, incredible. I love being on the board. It's just fantastic.
I can't imagine there's anything left that you want to do career-wise. But is there anything you feel like you haven't done yet that's still on your dream list or your bucket list?
Well, if I could do anything to help in fundraising to get rid of this current president, I would do that. That is for sure. You know, people sometimes say, why don't you go into politics? Like, you know, I probably would have loved to have done that way back. But, you know, there's only so much you can do.
Look at Bernie. Look at Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
I'm like, how the heck do they have the energy?
I know. Unbelievable.
Amazing?
I want to be them.
Wow. Well, we all want to be you. So yeah. Whatever you have, I hope to help you bottle it one of these days. You're incredible.
Thank
so
you.
Let's do a quick speed round.
Okay.
Favorite kitchen utensil?
A great Japanese French knife, chef knife.
Song that makes you smile?
Well, it shouldn't, but it does. Why? By Annie Lennox.
A treasured cookbook. Doesn't have to be your favorite, but just one in your collection you use a lot and love.
I can't say that it's one I use a lot and love, but I still have my mom's version of the Settlement cookbook just for fun as a treasure.
Oldest food in your fridge?
A bottle of truffle oil.
Does that keep a long time?
No. I just can't stand to throw it away.
A food you would never eat?
I'm not wild about sea urchins anymore after an experience at Le Perroquet.
Oh, okay. We won't ask about that. Dream vacation destination?
I have to say, right now, it's Hollywood Beach in Oxnard.
Why that?
Nobody's on it, and it's you can let your dogs off free, and we have two, you know, golden doodles, and they love it. I always say it's for them.
Oh, what are their names?
Punch and Fanny.
Cute.
We
Who are they named
three.
For?
Oh, Liz's 96-year-old mother and all of their friends, her friends at the home where she lives, named Fanny. Perfect Jewish name. Punch is because he's a rescue boy, and we wanted to give him, he's so scared, so we wanted to give him some power, so we called him Punch.
Oh, that's sweet. Okay, and the last question, and this is funny because you are a food celebrity, but if you had to be trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be and why? And you can't say Mary Sue.
One food celebrity? Oh, I thought it was just going to be one celebrity.
Oh, well, you know what? Since you are a food celebrity, we'll grant you that. You can pick a celebrity you'd want to be trapped on a desert island with.
Obama, for sure.
Yeah, good answer. That's it for today's show. Thank you to Susan Feniger for stopping by. If you find yourself in Santa Monica, go check out Socolo, the latest restaurant from Susan and Mary Sue Milliken. We'd love for you to subscribe to Radio Cherry Bomb wherever you get your podcasts. And we'd also love if you could rate and review the show. Let us know who you'd love to hear on Radio Cherry Bomb in 2020. Radio Cherry Bomb is edited, engineered, and produced by Jess Seidman. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, I'm Lauren Dean, and I'm an executive producer of many food shows and a cookbook author. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? That would be Pamela Cannon, executive editor at Ballantine Books. Pam has edited countless cookbooks, including Rachel Ray's latest memoir. She's an enormous supporter of women in food.